You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
Or maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Gashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC, Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am a pink eye free Andrew Wiebe. With me, David Goss, Matt the Armchair Analyst, Doyle. You guys are liars. Just lies, lies, lies. Wasn't pink eye. Did have a little bit of an eye infection issue, but I listened to the show. You guys held it down in my stead, so thank you.
You're welcome.
I guess you're welcome at this point. I mean, you come in hot, you call us liars, and then you say thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it goes.
I would just like to be put out there that you missed on Monday for being sick, and we tweeted it out, and the first response was, did Dave not wash his hands again on Twitter?
Oh.
And it's like, so it's on me now.
You have problems with hand washing?
Have you not listened to our intro over the last 2.5 months?
Oh, yeah. That does get beat into my head all the time.
When
I
this show starts,
about that.
Is your brain completely off
for the basically, first 5 minutes? Yeah. I mean, you're actually, that's like the course of my life. You know, it's majority off. And then when I hear that, that's why he's here. It's just like an automatic flip in my head. And then I know I have to come in
so
and say something.
Weebs, what happened to you? Like, what? Did you, like, not wash your hands after being on the subway or something?
No,
that was always my phobia. Like, I did wash my hands, like, 50 times a day.
I'm quite militaristic about that. Like, I scrub these bad boys. So I don't think it's that. Part of me thinks perhaps hot yoga. You know, your face is on that sweaty mat. I don't know. Infected eye gland, or not eye gland, oil gland by my eye. So
can we please move on?
We'll move on. Well, we got a great show today, by the way. Really, really good show. Pink eye free show. Jerome Kiesewetter, who you probably have seen in a U.S. jersey here against Iceland, had some really great moments, has been with youth national teams, a great prospect, possibly getting his second cap against Canada on Friday. Well, we're going to talk to him in just 1 second. In the second segment, Peter Vermees, who basically, Dave, lays out the inner workings of MLS for us in reference to Christian Namath, in reference to Eric Palmer Brown, TAM, GAM, all this other, all these other buzzwords.
If you like MLS, you have to listen to
it. Yeah, basically. That's the deal there. So before we get there, though, a little bit more news. Stuart Holden. We've all been rooting for him for years now, basically, to make his return. That will not be happening. He is now a father. He is also retired from playing soccer. Of course, he'll still be involved in the game, I expect. You would think that his announcer duties will increase as well. This is a sad day. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Stu was a guy for U.S. national fans and MLS fans as well that had this huge bump. He goes to Bolton. He gets that story where he's one of the best. You know, I say this is the most complete player in the Premier League or whatever it was at the time. Our hearts swelled with pride. He had some just really unfortunate injuries. Nigel de Jong, Johnny Evans, surgeries on surgeries, that gold cup that he had to leave, that you just your heart dropped for him.
He was so good that he played in a gold cup after not playing on a club team and was starting in a gold cup final, and then he got hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how good he was, though, for a time, and he was the guy. We don't know how it would have looked, but potentially him and Michael Bradley could have started in center midfield for 6 or 7 years and put us on another level. I think he's one of the players I've most ever enjoyed watching in a U.S. national team jersey. There are players that are good. There are players that are productive. But to be productive and fun to watch and enjoy the game,
infectious.
He was on the top of that
list. What's your top moment? What's your Holden moment, Doyle?
I don't know if I really have one. I just enjoyed kind of just his rise, because honest to God, I didn't really rate him when I first saw him. I didn't think there was anything overly special there. And then over the course of 2 or 3 seasons, he went from this sort of fringe player to a guy who, you know, as you guys said, had made the move to Bolton and was one of the best midfielders in the EPL. What was that? 2009, 2010, was it?
Yeah, when he got hurt, he was leading the league in tackles, one pass completion. It was like halfway through the season.
So it was just, it was less, see, I didn't think he was a particularly eye-catching or flashy player, but it was more just what he represented in terms of his career arc. And it's a shame that it ended the way it did.
I fully agree with everything Doyle just said, but there was the moment when he scored the goal versus Haiti in 2009, which was when he was breaking through.
I was actually there. Yeah, I was at that game. that was in Gillette. Philly, right?
No, it was in Gillette, I think.
Was it Gillette? Okay.
Yeah, and that was just, I mean, it didn't matter. It was a group stage game in the Gold Cup in 2009. They were going through anyway. They went to the final, but it was a pretty special goal.
Yeah,
and it was kind of, that was the moment where it was like, this is one of maybe two guys on this team that's going to break through.
Yep. I remember the goal he scored for Bolton, which he came through that late run, kind of the half volley low. Whole team mobs him. And you could always just see, even after he got hurt, the entire squad of that team, the entire fan base, had just latched onto this guy. They had just decided, you are special. We want to be around you. And I think that Stuart Holden will probably ultimately, A, be remembered for the player that he was, but B, and longer perhaps, and maybe more valuably as the person he was. So congrats to Stu Holden.
Still is.
On the next stage in his life. Yeah, a father. He's got a long career ahead of him, we assume. So congratulations to him on his career and on what's to come for him and his family. Let's get into U.S.-Canada. Big game on Friday for the Americans and the Canucks, 10:15 p.m. on FS1, Unimas, TSN, and RDS up there in Canada. A win, a kind of a last-second win there for the U.S. against Iceland. Canada didn't get their warm-up, however. What do we make of this one? Doyle, what are you looking out for?
I want to see the U.S. score first. I want to see us actually not trail in a game. I think we've trailed in 9 of our last 10, including games against a bunch of minnows there. So I do want to see that. And beyond that, I want to see, I think from both fan bases, should want to see the young kids get a look. For Canada, that means Daniil Henry getting back into the lineup. It means Bustos or Kianz Froese getting a look in central midfield, because they have real issues in terms of creativity filling those roles. And for the U.S., it's got to be Will Trapp or Matt Polster as the number 6. I want to see Kiesewetter and Morris up top together on the flanks in a 4-3-3.
I think it's going to be a solid center mid for Canada, and I'd like to see Nagby potentially start in that center midfield role and see if that he can pull the strings and carry the national team. I think this is a good place to prove that you have the potential to do that.
Yeah, a little bit of a match to try things. Jerome Kiesewetter looking for his first senior start. He is on the phone now. Jerome, how's it going, man?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you to be here.
Great. Well, let's start from the beginning, because I think some of our listeners might need an introduction. Where'd you grow up? What's your background like? Tell us a little about yourself.
So I was growing up, I grew up in Berlin, Germany. Lived there for all my life. And my dad is American. He was in the military for 20 years. And he met my mother in Germany. And, yep, that's where I grew up.
What is Berlin like? What was your upbringing like? I know you and John Brooks, apparently, you guys came up together.
Yeah, we came up together. Well, it was very fun for me. I grew up there. I have all my friends there. And right now my family lives in Austin, and everybody but my mother. So it's pretty far away, but still, I love both.
Were you one of those kids that grew up with a ball at your feet? What was your introduction to the game? Who was the first person to kind of take you out and kick the ball around with you?
I think I will. By myself, everybody in school, no, not in school, I was in wherever, in kindergarten. Everybody in kindergarten started playing soccer, and so I just picked it up there, and I never thought about playing professionally at first. And since I met John Brooks, he was like always playing on a little bit higher level, and I was just playing at my local club, and he brought me to this first, well, let's say the first bigger club. It was called Hertha Tiendorf. And, yeah, he introduced me to, like, I wouldn't say professional, but, like, bigger, on a bigger bigger level, on a better level, soccer.
Was the connection between you and John because you were both partially American, or were you guys just friends and then you found out?
No, we were friends before. So our parents knew each other before. And so to me, he's like my brother. He's family to me.
When was the first time you met him? When's the first time you remember seeing John?
The first time I met him was on the soccer field. We grew up in the same neighborhood, Templo. And I met him on the soccer pitch, on the soccer field. I was there with my mom at first. I was, I don't know, let's say five.
Oh,
let's
wow.
say four or five. And our parents knew each other before, but I didn't, like, exactly know him. And So I met him there, and then since that day, he became a brother to me. We met every day. We grew up every day together. Yeah, we spent every day in all our lives together.
What are the little things? What's something funny about John? You know, like your best friend growing up, you always have these little stories, these little things that they did that maybe annoyed you or the best story you have about him. What's the best one you can share about John?
The best thing I can share about John? He's a funny guy. He's hilarious. Nobody knows it. Yeah, a lot of people think that he's a little bit arrogant, maybe a little bit cocky, but he's just so funny. And, together it's just, we laugh all the time, all day long when we see each other.
How often do you guys talk about the fact that you're two kids that grew up in Berlin and now you're both playing for the U.S. national team?
Oh, we talk about, I would say very often, because we reflect our story very often because it's just funny. We just laugh about it, that our dreams could come true, that we could play together in a men's national team. It's what we wanted since we met each other, since I started saying, okay, I really want to do professional soccer, and that was my dream. That's why I wanted to play.
Why the U.S.? And obviously your dad is the big part here, but I read somewhere where you said you've always kind of felt more American. What does feeling American mean to you? How did you kind of identify that within your life and your personality?
I would say the whole culture thing. I grew up with American people. My mother has like a lot of American friends I grew up with, and I just felt it. I just felt more American than German, and just from the fact that I do not look like German. So let's say if I meet a person and he'll ask me, "Yeah, where are you from?" and I say I'm German, then nobody will say, "Ah, okay." Everybody will ask, "Yeah, and your dad or your mother?" So there has to be something more. And so I started just more feeling American than German.
And then the journey with U.S. soccer, how did that start?
I think that started, I was in the U-17s, I think, in Hertha Berlin. And Thomas Runge called me one day and called me up for a camp in Peru. And since then, I started playing for the U.S. national team.
Now, Thomas has spent a lot of time in our office. He's been an analyst for us on a number of things. He's even been on this show a couple different times. Let's say, Jerome, that he is an interesting fella. He is quite the character. What did you make of Thomas Rongen?
What did I make of Thomas Rongen? Like, what kind of character he is?
Yeah, he's not a normal. He's a unique guy. He's a unique guy. Let's just say that.
I think he has his. He has his plan, and he'll do whatever it takes to achieve that. I think he's a very strong character. Well, I met him only, we only spent like two or three weeks together, mm-hmm. but I could already tell, like, the way he was coaching us, and he has his plans, and he really wants to fulfill his dreams and to make ourselves a better player.
Certainly things working out for you here. You made your debut with the national team. Before we get to your game and on the field stuff, it's interesting. I was reading.
You can tell him I said hello.
Oh, I will.
If you meet
him
again next time.
He's here all the time, man. I'll let him know. Jerome says what's up.
Okay.
It's interesting to me that being with the U.S., it seems like in some ways, helped you reconnect with your dad. Is that the way you saw it? How did this all go down?
Yeah, that's 100% correct. So the first thing, I played there in, I think, Peru, and I had to reach out to my dad to get my passport fixed and everything, and we haven't spoke for, like, I don't know, more years, I would say almost 10 years, 15 years maybe. I didn't speak to him, and I needed to do my passport right and everything to, like, play every game. And so he was asking, yeah, how are things going? What did you do? So we started, like, talking more and more. And right now our relationship is getting better and better. It's pretty good.
Have you been to Austin yet? It's a great city.
No, I haven't been yet, but I'll go there in summer maybe. He already told me stories about Austin, that Austin is a very nice city. I should come visit. Yeah, I will. He lives close to Austin. He said 40 minutes. So I'll go to Austin probably first and then visit him.
Sounds like you're going to have a lot of summers in the U.S. unless you're traveling around with the U.S. national team. Let's get to your game, man. Tell us about you on the field. What kind of player are you? I know we've seen you in the youth competitions. We saw you here against Iceland. But from your own perspective, what kind of player do you think you are?
what kind of player? I would say fast. Good body. What else? I try to score every time.
I mean, you like to be aggressive. You came on the field and you changed the game. It really woke a lot of people up. Your ability to try and take people one-on-one, do you see yourself more as a center forward, a winger, an attacking man?
No, I do both. I usually play on the right wing of my club, but I also play striker. And I just want to help the team wherever I can. With crosses, with assists, with goals, with everything. And I try to, like, help the whole team to believe that we can still win, or even if we're down or if we're up, that I just want to help the team to win.
What is your club situation right now?
Right now, I'm still at VfB Stuttgart. My contract runs till 30th of June, I think. Yeah, this summer. Yeah, let's say summer. And from there on, I'll see the next time what happens.
Do you have any thoughts about what might happen? Anything you want to do? Is there a, you know, have you thought about playing in the U.S.? Have you thought, hey, I'm staying in Germany, I just have to find the right club? Or, hey, Stuttgart's the right club for me, I'd like to stay here. What are you thinking right now?
No, I think if I have the opportunities to go someplace else, I'll probably do it. And the MLS is a good league. It's getting better and better every year. And, yes, I think MLS is just a good spot to be at.
Have you been talking to guys in camp or guys from the Olympic team that play in MLS about the league?
Yes,
about their teams?
Sure.
Is there
talked to a lot of guys like Josie or Michael that have been to like Europe and MLS, how they would compare and how they would compare it. And yeah, they told me a lot of things. So they have seen both sides. They've seen the European side and the MLS side. So I think that was like the most important people to talk to, and also Jermaine. And I just get good reflex.
There's no team in Austin, so family's off the table. Has there ever been a city in the U.S. you've always wanted to live in, you've always dreamt about?
I always wanted to live in. I think there are so many good cities. It's just too many, too many to count them. In Germany, you just have one city to live. And I think it's Berlin, but in the U.S. it's so different. There's so many good cities that you can compare it to Germany.
Hey, we're in New York City right now, man. Come over here. We'll bring you into the office.
New York City sounds nice, yeah. I was talking to Kyrie before. He said New York City is the best place. And then somebody else said Chicago. And then I've been to Miami once. It was also nice. Well, it's just too many good spots.
No doubt about it, man. Do you think you got this first cap with the national team, the full national team? Tell me a little bit about how that felt. What did you, when you stepped out there, when you got done with the game maybe, and I'm sure your phone filled up with messages, how did the whole process feel? And, of course, you got another opportunity against Canada as well.
Yeah, it was just great. It was just great going out there and play my first game for the senior national team. That's what I wanted to do since I was young. I always dreamed of playing for the senior national team, and it was funny that after the game I was like, "Yeah, after my first game, nobody can take that away from me anymore." And it was just awesome. It was a great feeling.
There you
have it. Can't compare to anything.
Your next chance coming up here on Friday against Canada, 10:15 p.m. Eastern. If you want to watch Jerome, Fox Sports 1 here in the U.S., in Canada as well on TV. Jerome, good luck, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm
sure we'll touch base here in the future as well, all right?
Yeah, we will.
Big thanks to Jerome there. I think he's a guy that could capture the hearts of the U.S. faithful, maybe. Just kind of have a fun-loving attitude to him. You can tell he's just like, this is awesome. I'm here. This is what?
Yeah, no, very much so. We've had that experience a few times when we've talked to some of the young national team players. Like, you can feel that they're not green behind the ears, but like the pure excitement that we think we would experience, that they are.
Bobby Wood probably feeling that now, if you remember. Somebody reminded me of this back in the day, that interview when he was still
just kind of depression.
Yeah.
And then we all fell for him. Or the first time we talked to Terrence Boyd, and he was just like over the moon. You talked to him.
Yeah, that was great.
Down in wherever, and he was telling
Panama,
about about his turtle peeing on his hands.
Fun stuff. The beginning of something, perhaps, for Joan Kisavetra and the U.S. national team. Let's talk a little MLS, some moves, some rumors. Iker Casillas rumored to be connected with NYCFC. He's at Porto right now, of course. Got a year left on his deal. Josh Saunders had a pretty good year last year, though, Dave.
I was supposed to answer on that?
I'm just saying.
Doyle, who do you take tomorrow if you're playing in a soccer game, Iker Casillas or Josh Saunders?
I take Iker Casillas, even though he's been – I mean, he really hasn't been very good the past couple of years. The reason
– You didn't have to expand on it. You could have just said Iker
Casillas. The reason you bring him in is because he's always had a reputation for being a great organizer, for being a guy who can make sure that he calls the game out in front of him. He's not an elite keeper anymore, and I wouldn't pay him the wages of an elite keeper, but there's your long-winded answer.
And based off last year's lineup for NYCFC, you might have to start Josh Saunders at center back, so you need that additional spot.
He's got the size, huh? He's got the size.
Something you skipped over, which we should mention, Josh Perez, USU-20 international, signing with Fiorentina today.
Fiorentina.
Sorry, it's been rumored for a while. Hugo Perez's nephew. So that's another someone tweeted or emailed us last show and said, has there ever been this many guys playing at top clubs, youth, whatever, you know, between Zalalem and all these guys, and that's another
name. A nice move for him there. Some other news going down the row here in MLS. Amro Tariq, who you probably don't know, an Egyptian youth international, a guy who's kind of bounced around Europe, 23-year-old left-sided player. Your notes here for me, Dave, said that he played for the Chivas USA reserves.
Club never dies.
Yeah, that's sweet.
It's always alive in our hearts.
Bring him back, baby. Bring back the goats. That's a signing that I think is a little bit – it's a mystery box for them. Come on, we don't really know much about that one. Ola Kamara, a center forward, also signed on this Thursday for Crew SC. Double Kamaras. Two Kamaras. 26-year-old Norwegian center forward. He's a winger as well. He's got some caps for the Norwegian national team. He's scored some goals where he's been. He's bounced around quite a bit in Scandinavia, Germany, Austria, most recently in Molde, which is where Josh Gott was at, by the way. But it looks like a good signing for them. We knew they needed depth, Doyle. Right. This seems to fill that bill.
Yeah, it does. And I wonder what it means, because now he's – if Kai is back and 100% committed, that means they now have three center forwards on this roster. So something to look at in terms of the larger picture. You know, Crew might be letting Kai know that he can continue to hold out and negotiate for as long as he wants.
Well, we'll see what happens there in Columbus. In Philly, those AZ connections for Ernie Stewart are paying off. It looks like they're on the verge of signing Roland Alberg, who's a 25-year-old attacking center mid from Den Haag. So we'll see what happens with that one.
I can just picture the database that Ernie Stewart has of Scandinavian-based and Eredivisie-based soccer players. Because that's like what Eredivisie lives on is – you go, you know, we saw it with Johansson. You go from Iceland to Sweden and then to the Dutch league, and then you get sold off to a higher league. If he could start picking those guys out before they go to the higher league or when they're first coming into Holland and bring them into a place like Philly, that would be awesome. That's all I want to say.
What do you think, Philly fans? Let us know. You know how to get at us. A couple other things. A rapid signing. Mikhail Williams, a 25-year-old center back, Trinidad and Tobago. He's got some senior team caps, so nice signing for them as well. They also signed... oh, and it's not in front of me right now.
Shaklin Gassi.
Yeah, Gassi is a DP, an Albanian left winger kind of, but a goal scorer for sure. Back-to-back Golden Boot winner in Switzerland.
I want to bring something up here. You know, you guys talked to Kiesa Vetter, and he said he has a little bit of MLS interest maybe this summer. If I'm the Rapids, I have that number one spot in the allocation order. Oh. I sit on that right now, and I use it this summer to try to bring Jerome Kiesa Vetter in.
You think that's your number one? But is that your number one goal if you have that spot in your Colorado?
Yep. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
Interesting.
All right. There you have it. Hey, look, we're going to go to the break right now. Peter Ramis coming up in just a little bit. Stick with us.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I wouldn't have to work hard if I were a bitty, bitty rich idle, diddle, diddle, diddle man.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. I promised. I said that you could play Fiddler on the Roof. You saved it for me. Much appreciated. Right. Peter Vermees coming up in just a second.
I thought maybe this would be one of those where you didn't come in.
Yeah,
you just let
I just
ride.
Sat there. Yeah, I
this
thought
is
about
a great song.
I appreciate it. I appreciate that. Hey, congratulations on getting Hamilton tickets the other day. That worked out for you real well.
Brutalized
yep.
by that.
Yep.
Hey, they were only $329 a ticket.
Lots going on in Sporting KC world right now. Christian Nemeth. Moved on, sold the Cutter for reports of multi-million dollars in there. Eric Palmer Brown, their homegrown player, also loaned to Porto. Peter Vermees is now on the line to help explain some of those moves. Peter, how's it going?
I'm good, good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty good here. Before we get into Namath, before we get into Eric Palmer Brown, all these things that have recently been in the news, I had something I was wondering about. I was sitting here thinking, I was remembering back on training sessions that I used to watch in preseason. And I always remember you being right there in the mix. I have to imagine you're still right there with fitness. Do you get the itch when you go to preseason? Do you get into these games and think, man, I can still hack it?
No, I actually don't. I mean, that's. I'd love to say, yes, I do. We were actually talking about this the other day. I made a joke with the guys. We had a really hard we had a double session a couple days ago. And it was the second session, and it was you know, it was kind of like the last exercise in the training. And, you know, we blew the whistle, if you will, it was over. And the guys were kind of like, you know, this little sigh of relief. And I was like, all right, everybody on the line. And you could see all the guys like, what? and I was actually kidding, obviously. But then everybody had a good laugh about it. And I said to, I think, Kerry Zavagnin, and I said, boy, remember those days when you actually had to get on the line? I'm not up for those days.
No, man. There's
but those days have passed.
There's nothing you want to hear less than everybody on the line. That's like that's the worst thing. But I mean, you're right there in the soccer tennis, right? I mean, you and Kerry are still running that. So that's
that is definitely a game that I can not only have fun with, but still compete in because it's a short distance to have to cover. So that's a good thing.
Let's move on to some of these newsworthy things. And Christian Nemeth is the one that everybody's talking about in Kansas City and across MLS as well. A nice transfer fee to him. He's headed to Qatar. For you guys, a good piece of business. One of the things I thought was very interesting listening to you talk about it in your interviews afterwards was this idea that perhaps Christian Nemeth did not write that Facebook post that he put out, kind of his statement on things. As a more general question, agents and players in negotiations – like, what did it mean when you thought he didn't write it? What are you implying there? What's that mean?
Yeah, no, look, it's actually pretty simple. First off, I think Christian was a very good player for the time that he spent with us. I think Christian is an incredible talent and obviously has a lot of potential. And that's one of the reasons why I found him. I think what a lot of people don't realize is that when we did get him, first and foremost, I had seen him in 2008. And obviously he was untouchable at that time because he was bought by Liverpool. And then when you take a step forward, when we actually signed him, we signed him in the January window of 2015. And the 6 months prior to that, so that window before that, he wasn't even registered with the team. He was basically let go from his Dutch team and he had no team there for the next 6 months. So here we pick up a guy who really wasn't playing and registered with anyone. And look, I think that as much as I think players have a major role and responsibility in the success of their careers, I think we created a good environment for Christian. He wound up having some good success, and there were some suitors out there. But that really wasn't something that we were actively pursuing. We had no interest in selling him at the time. I'm not sure if you know this or not, but when I signed him to a 4-year deal. Mm-hmm. So I went to him at the end of the end of the 2015 season, and I said that to him, his agents, that what I would do is if Christian had a good year, I would basically open up his contract and basically give him a new one and make him obviously a better offer than what he was currently going to be receiving in the contract that we had already signed him to. And so I will tell you, and I think you guys would agree, I'm not going to speak about the numbers, but I would say to you that we made an incredibly, incredibly generous offer, and more importantly, a significant increase in salary from 15 to 16. And they just felt that it wasn't enough, both he and his agents. And at the end, we just couldn't come to an agreement. And then it started to become a little bit more of a contentious thing because they felt that we were holding him back. And so then this offer came in. Wasn't obviously a good offer when we first started. and negotiated it quite a bit. And I'm talking to more from Sporting Kansas City to the Qatari club. Eventually got to the numbers that we felt a lot more comfortable with. And they basically at the end, and you know, I know what that post is. And again, I'm, you know, me, I'm not a big social media guy, but it was forwarded on to me. I read it and I kind of laughed because very seldom do you see around the world that a team allows a player that's a 4-year deal where they actually even let them go just to go make more money somewhere else. If they're not also involved in the transfer or the ability to also cut a deal for you know, for the organization. And in this situation, again, when you're not actively pursuing the player or actively pursuing the sale of the player, I actually think that it proves what we've always said here, and that is we look for ambitious players. We look for guys that want to be successful. And at the same time, if they want to move on from our club, whatever that reason may be, as long as both the player and the club feel comfortable with whatever that move is, then we will at least entertain it. And I think that we, again, held strong to our philosophy. But this was not something that we actually wanted to do. And I think at the end, I was a little miffed when I read the post because it definitely did not represent whatsoever what, you know, our organization or, for that matter, Major League Soccer had fulfilled in their promises to the player and actually allowed the player to go move on to what, you know, ultimately he wanted to do, and that was make more money. So
one of the things it said in the post, and you're saying, you know, some of it may not be true, but I'm interested in, is it talks a little bit about Euros and how it seemed like that may have been a point of contention. Did you guys have an issue with the time he'd miss or the amount of time he'd have to be in camp before Euros started?
No, we actually never even talked about it. So that I think that's my those are points that I never had a conversation with anyone, whether the player or the agents in regards to it. So I don't even know where that came from.
PR spin, man. That's going to happen. Anyway, Christian Nemeth, moving on. You guys got a big windfall from this on the transfer side. And this is always where I'm interested in what happens, because obviously you get a percentage of the transfer. MLS gets a percentage. Not all of your percentage can go to allocation money. You also have infrastructure money that goes in there you can put back into the club. So how does this sale set you up down the line, specifically from the allocation sense and the first team competitive sense? What avenues does this open up for you?
Yeah, it's a very good question, because I think when you look at our roster and you look at how we have built our roster over the years, you know, the fact of the matter is we don't have the ability. And when I say the ability, I'm talking about if you're trying to create a true business model that at the end of the day works, not one where you're just sort of in the red all the time and you don't really care about that. And so my example would be is we're not in the market where we can go ahead and spend on one player a salary of $6, $7, $8 million a year. Mm-hmm. Could we do it based on the wealth of our ownership group? Sure. But it doesn't fit our business model. So we have to be in the world of finding more players that are, you know, I guess, you know, the buzzword these days is sort of the TAM player. We're more of that club. If you look at our 3 DPs that we currently have in Roger Espinoza, Graham Zusi, and Matt Beisler, that's really the world that they fall into, right? So we have been able to, and again, in this situation, we'll take the max allocation and stick it towards our salary cap. But what it allows us to do is it allows us to keep more of those players in that range on our team in comparison to some of the other teams in the markets that they play in. They may be going after those high-priced players, which, again, it's not going to fit into our business model, but it allows us to kind of keep our core group of players together, which I think we've done over the last 5, 6 years now, and that's been, I think, a key component to us having at least some consistency and success, and more importantly, being very competitive.
You can kind of see that in L.A., right, with the movement of Omar Gonzalez and Juninho, and you bring in, you know, you have the big guys, the $5, $6, $7 million players, and then they're able to get these guys – out of contract. They did some massaging, let's call it. On your side, though, Christian Emeth leaves. I have to imagine you have replacements you're thinking about. Did you have a running list? Is this the sort of thing where you say, okay, now we got to look ahead to the summer window or even next January? Is it something that happens this window? How do you replace them?
Yeah, good question. First is I like to think that we've added some really good pieces in Brad Davis and Justin Knapp, both guys that can play on the wings. I think they're just two players that can definitely help us in those areas of the field. But we do. We have a running list of players that we're constantly looking at and seeing, whether it's this window, the next window, that we can add them. I would tell you that we are aggressively pursuing a few of those targets at the moment, and our objective is to add another player here in this window. So, it's something that's it's an ongoing process. We have shadow teams of players all over the world that are in our style of play and also in our depth chart in our system of play. And so we're constantly just updating that shadow team, if you will, or teams, and they're from different leagues around the world. And then again, we just go after the targets as we see fit. Right now, we're aggressively pursuing a few of those targets.
I have to imagine Tam will come into that. You mentioned that Tam-style player. We had Ali Curtis on the show on Monday, and we're talking about Matt Miazga and some of these general topics. And his point was that he thought it would be better if Tam was integrated into the salary cap. I've talked to some people around the league, and there's a feeling sometimes that Tam forces you into signings of a certain level when maybe it would be easier to use and maybe better used on quote unquote, some of the middle class players that some people think are being squeezed out. How has Tam changed your job, Peter? How has it maybe changed who you go after it? Has it changed anything?
Well, I think because the actual Tam money has certain restrictions on it, you have to be extremely creative around how you use it. I would agree if that money was had less restrictions on it, I think it would be a little bit more useful, because again, when you look at the different ways that teams build their rosters, it would give them the flexibility to do it based on what their philosophy is and how they build their roster. And right now it's as if everyone has to abide by the TAM money the same exact way, but it may not fit based on what their philosophy of their team is. And so the other example I would give, and that is, because TAM money is activated by a certain level of player that you bring in, what if you have the ability to bring the same caliber player, same quality player, but just at a price that is less than what would activate the TAM? It almost hurts you for being prudent and responsible and financially responsible. And that's the part I think that maybe needs to be looked at a little bit more. But I will say this, I'm not going to complain, because it is additional money that's been given to us to build our roster. And I think that part is excellent, and I love that we're moving in that direction. But like anything, sometimes you have to see how it all works within the system. And then MLS, I think, has also been very good over the years, and that is they make some changes pretty quickly to help adjust to maybe some things not working as good as they thought they would.
So the other source of money here, and we've mostly talked about the allocation side, and it's fun to say GAM and TAM, and that's the whole new buzzword here, but the thing I think kind of fades into the background when these transfers happen is that there's this big chunk of money that goes to infrastructure, that goes to building the club, and we never really hear what happens to that money. What are you guys doing with that money? I mean, you've sold Kai, you've sold Uri Rossell, you now have this Namath money to work with. What does that money get reinvested into? Do you have plans for that?
Okay, so the first part is that our ownership group has been very good in that whenever we have the sale of a player, they immediately, they've said this, and it's kind of a policy within our club, and that is they want it to be reinvested back into the team and the technical side. So the first thing that what I always do is I'll try to take the maximum allocation that we're allowed to based on the transfer and apply it to the salary cap first and foremost. The second part is the money that is left over it goes into a bucket, basically MLS holds it in escrow, and it's called new value money. And that's the money that now is you can use for the things that you talked about. For example, you could use it for building a new field. You can build it. You can use it for putting lights on a field. You could use it for building a locker room. You could use it for travel expenses with your academy. You also could use that money to offset costs on paying down the BP. So, you know, any of the money above and beyond the 457.5, you could use some of that money also for players as well. So there's a lot of different ways that you could use it. And I think it's all going to depend on what that individual club at that time is looking to do. But the fact that in our club and the policy that I think is great, and our owners have been, you know, very, very generous from this point of view. And that is any sales on the technical side at the moment, they have stated that we want you to reinvest it back into the players and the team and the technical side. So that's helped us a lot. And you've seen our facilities, and we continue to build, as we're getting, you know, towards, you know, our building of the NTC, the National Training Center. So there's a lot of different things that we're doing. But the great thing is I don't even have to touch any of that money for something like that. And we're still doing those other things that are hopefully going to continue to keep pushing the envelope when it comes to putting the best product we can on the field in Kansas City.
Humor me here a little bit, Peter. What's like an example of something that you guys need that you might buy with this money? Is it, you know, USL stadium improvements to give the Swope Park Rangers an even better home? Is it, you know, another coach, a goalkeeper coach for the academy, perhaps? Although maybe you still have Pardo there.
We've made a huge investment this year into staff. You know, prior to the sale even happening, and so that was in the plan that I presented at the end of this year. So we've made a huge investment in staff just because we've grown so much. You know, we've added what we call centers of excellence at the academy level, so that we're getting kids even at a younger age introduced to, if you will, the sporting way. And so I would say it's all the above. It's just the places maybe where we don't have, you know, we see like over the course of this year, who knows, maybe we may not, like you said, maybe need to add another coach or another sports scientist or what have you. If we will, we can definitely tap into that money, but we won't be, we won't be wasteful of it. That's for sure. Because we realize it's not easy when you sell a player. Obviously it changes things. It's not easy to replace that player. And we also have to be very smart about how we go about finding, you know, the replacement for that player. And then also, if we're going to use that for other things within our club, we got to make sure that the money is well spent.
For sure. This kind of leads me to this spot, and it's something I've wondered about for a while, and it goes back a long way in this league to things like Taylor Twellman's potential sale and Chalry Joseph and down the line. And I think there have been times where MLS definitely has wanted to hold on to some of their players when there's outside interest, but you can also see the way that some of these sales can change a club, both from the first team competition side, but also, as we've talked about here, the infrastructure side. So my question to you, I guess, is should MLS be more willing to sell? Should they be looking for players like, oh, I don't know, Uri Rosell and Christian Namath, to give two examples within your club that you kind of figured down the line might move? So you invest in guys that you can reap big rewards on down the line. I mean, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I think, though, you know, look, as much as Major League Soccer is heavily involved in obviously decision-making around players in this league, they also give, maybe autonomy isn't the right word, but there's a collaborative, working relationship in making those decisions also around players. And so even more importantly, of what the philosophy of that individual club is. And so you may have a club that realizes, hey, look, for us to continue to be successful, we need to sell a player every, you know, couple years to sure to be able to add that money to our salary cap and continue our model of building a roster year after year. That's the way you do it. Whereas another club might say, we don't need the money. We have a different way of building our roster, and for us to sell this player and then find another one and try to now, you know, get a replacement winds up being even more difficult than just trying to keep the player. So I think it really is going to come down to the individual club. I think the league's pretty good on giving teams the ability to sort of forge their own philosophy around how they want to do it. And I think some of those guys that you had mentioned earlier, and I'm not talking about our players that were here and were sold, but other players early on, to Twelman, Shari Joseph, what have you, I think a lot of times that's based on what the club wants to do. But I think our league is evolving in that area. And I think teams around the world are starting to look to MLS and see that there's a lot of quality players here, and that's why you're seeing more and more sales.
One of the players that wasn't sold but it's being talked about, obviously, Eric Palmer Brown, going on loan to Porto. And there, we've gotten a couple of questions from fans, a little bit of confusion of why that move, if it was about playing time, but now you have Swope Park Rangers. If they were really invested Porto, why not make an acquisition and not just a loan? What was the logic there, and what's the goal from that? And what was the difference in this move from other moves? We've heard rumors about Juventus with him in the past. What made this one the right one?
Yeah, it's actually a really good question. And I understand the probably a little bit of sort of scratching your head and saying, why would you loan him out when you guys are starting a USL team in 2016? So if the player was going to get experience, this would be a great place to do it. So I'll kind of give you the behind the scenes. So Eric's a pretty ambitious kid. He's been in our club. He came in the first generation of 2007 when Major League Soccer made the mandate for clubs to have academies. And he was an 11-year-old playing up on U13s. And he's always been that player that's always played up because he's just had something special in him. He was able to do it physically and technically. So when we looked at this situation, we looked at his ambition, and we've had a lot of talks with him. And he's a little, this is where he was, it's one of the more mature decisions or more mature perceptions that he had and perspectives he had. And that is, he felt that, look, he's a young kid, don't get me wrong, he's 18 years old, but his world was centered around, look, all I know is Kansas City. And I would really like to see what it's like somewhere else. And we have a pretty decent relationship with different clubs in different areas of the world. Porto is one of them. And so they had some interest in Eric for a while. And so we discussed with them the opportunity for him to go there on loan and sort of get a little bit of taste of what it would like to be playing in Europe because he does have that ambition. Although he's young, he still needs time to grow. We thought it would be a good opportunity for him to get out of Kansas City and grow up a little bit. And it's really more on that side than so much on the soccer side. We wanted to give him the opportunity to grow up as a young man with an experience at going to a place where he doesn't know the language, he'd have to start learning a different language, he'd have to deal with a different culture, all those things. And we just felt that it was a good move for, you know, his overall growth, not just soccer. And it's one of the things that we're putting a lot of investment into is, you know, everybody always talks about the technical, the tactical, the physical, and the psychological, but there's also the social aspect, the emotional aspect that we have to have a responsibility for as well, especially with our academies, because we're working with, you know, boys that are eventually becoming men. And part of that is not just soccer, but it's also the investment in the person. And we got to make sure that we're looking after that too. And we just felt this was going to be a good opportunity. And I think both he and us are sort of excited about this opportunity. And it has led me to have a discussion with our owners and explain to them that although we are investing into a USL team, which I think is a tremendous area where we were, you know, had a big gap in, and now we filled that gap with this team because we have this transition between our academy and our senior team now that's going to help, you know, develop players that someday are going to play in our first team and they get those games that they need. But we should never cut ourselves off from other opportunities, such as this FC Porto one for some of our players, because it's going to give them the opportunity to grow in other ways that we just can't provide because they're still in our marketplace.
Is this something maybe that could be an answer in a way to you have an academy kid, if they don't go to college, they don't get that life experience, because that's what you always hear about, the opportunity to move away from home and grow up. Is this maybe a way for you to find an in-between for players who want to stay and continue to be a pro and not go to school?
That's exactly right. It's a great analogy. It's truly an important aspect of what we're trying to do. Doesn't mean that you can't get it in Kansas City, but it just means that you're open to providing a different experience where a player almost needs it to evolve. And I think in Eric's case, this opportunity is one that's going to, I think it's going to open his eyes up to the world a little bit. And again, as I said to you, we had this, him and I had a meeting, you know, not too long ago, and I'd say maybe about 4 months ago. And he was the one who said, one of the reasons why I'd like to go is because I've just been in Kansas City my whole life, and I want to see what it's like somewhere else. I think it'll be good for me. And that was a mature observation and reflection on, you know, that he came up with. And I thought that was, you know, it was one of the better discussions I had with the young kid, and you know, I appreciated it, and it really made me think that this might be an opportunity where he needs to go and do this. The same way I looked at it when we first loaned out Dom Dwyer, 23rd. Christian Duke,
yep.
You know, Jonathan Kempin. You know, that was our first you know, blush into that area where we said, okay, we're gonna loan a few players out. And I remember it took me a week to convince all four guys on that, hey, this is a good thing for you. Don't take it as a demotion. And, you know, look what happened with Dom. You know, so I look at the same way, you know, Eric's situation here, because, like I said, it's not just a soccer experience. It truly is a life experience, and we need to help our players, you know, in that world as well.
Certainly going to be a whirlwind for him. One more before I let you go, Peter. We really appreciate your time. Some insightful stuff. For sure, here across the gamut, you've got a lot of players getting interest, but they're not the only ones. If reports are to be believed, I think in November I saw that two, perhaps EPL and a national team over there in Europe, were inquiring about you. I'm wondering if there's any truth to that. Any thoughts in your mind about your future and whether you have maybe ambitions a la Bob Bradley or perhaps U.S. national team? What are your thoughts on your future?
Yeah, look, the frank answer is that yes, there has been some real inquiries into some opportunities for myself. I think that's kind of normal in some respects in this business, you know, whether it's players, coaches, general managers, or what have you, those things come up. But I don't know. I've always been as a player and obviously as a coach as well and technical director. It's been my, I don't know, maybe it's just way I see things, my philosophy, what have you, is that very focused on what I'm doing, but I also do believe that there is a part of you that needs to always look at opportunities, evaluate them, and listen, because you just don't know what's out there. The one thing is, I'm not necessarily a guy that sits back and thinks that the grass is always greener on the other side. I'm trying to make my grass as green as possible on this side. So, different projects excite me. I've definitely been excited about the project here in Kansas City because it's been a tremendous one. Everything from turning around the club to, you know, building a new stadium and having it sold out and creating a model of play and identity of a club through its model of play. And so all those things have been very challenging and continue to be so now. We're introducing, as I said earlier, our USL team this year, and that's going to be the next challenge. How do we transition players between all three of our entities, from our academy to our USL team to our senior team? And how does that all work from a process perspective, from a communication point of view, and then just from a development standpoint? And so I'm still very motivated, very excited about what I do. But as the offers come, I'll listen. But I do know that I'm excited about the project and I'm still doing it in Kansas City.
A lot of work to be done here. Still, Peter Vermees leading it all up. The first game for Sporting Kansas City, opening day, March 6th at Seattle. A big one, 7 p.m. Eastern on Fox Sports 1. Peter, we appreciate the time, man. I really thank you for that and your insight here. Good luck going forward, all right?
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Big thanks to Peter Vermees. I mean, that was truly eye-opening, Dave. I mean, I think that anybody who listens to that is going to walk away with something learned, no doubt about it. Let us know what you think. At Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com. When we come back, the mailbag. What MLS player would we want to hang out with most?
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Find the devil inside me and I'm nailing back down.
Woo! Back on Extra Time Radio. Con los hermanos.
Is that Tavia singing?
Matt Doyle. No, David Goss. I am Andrew Wiebe. We are into the mailbag. Before we continue on and get some of your tweets in your mail here, I saw on the last show you guys talked about Paul Tenorio's piece about all these different MLS and U.S. national team, Canadian national team, the who's who basically having kind of 4v4 games preseason up there in SoCal. Well, I want to know what folks' ideal 4v4 team in MLS is. I'm asking you to build a 4v4 team from MLS players. We will decide who has the best team, or maybe the best couple teams, the most entertaining teams perhaps, and we will give you some MLS swag. I also want you to include a team name. Get creative. Nice. If it's a lame team name, you're probably not going to win. So just keep that in mind. Dave, what do we got here? What do we got in the bag?
We got a great email from Tootle, which we asked to PV, and it was about the Eric Palmer Brown loan to Porto. So we're going to send him something. We don't have to read it again and then pretend to answer it because, you know, we already did that.
Did already.
That's good radio right there, guys.
That's great radio. Alan Gordon in San Jose. Not that Alan Gordon, we always have to say. He wants to know why there aren't ETR t-shirts to purchase on MLS.com. He wants people to be out there as walking billboards.
You know, we have talked a lot in the past about getting some ETR-specific swag. It's, you know, coffee cups, t-shirts.
Stickers.
Yeah, we've thought about doing, like, you know, jam spoons back in that day where it would be, like, a t-shirt with the jam spoon on it and maybe Simon's face.
That's a niche product right
it
there.
It is. It's a little bit niche. But, hey, we're all – if you're listening to this show, we're all part of a niche network. Right now, these MLS fans.
Now let's get into the serious stuff, though. Uh-huh. Ethan Simi on Twitter, and he says, if you have one big player to hang out with for the day and impress, who do you choose, and do you take them to hot yoga? I'm going to shift this a little bit and say,
yeah, I'm not taking them to hot yoga.
Who's the MLS player that you want to hang out with the most for a day? A nice bro date.
What are we doing on our bro date?
I think you're gonna wake up late, obviously. Have a good bagel, brunch maybe.
Uh-huh.
Go for a walk outside, maybe a bike ride. Yeah, of course. Maybe a bike ride, something nice outside. Then you get back together, catch a soccer game in the afternoon,
maybe a little afternoon matinee, perhaps a nap.
Potentially. On the table. You probably end the day with Fiddler on the Roof production.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Who's your person, Dave?
I already asked the question, so you guys have to answer
first. Oh, wow. You don't have a person.
I didn't really. I kind of do. I mean, Kai Kamara.
Doyle, I'm going to send it to you.
Kai Kamara is an easy answer, so.
Those of you who follow me on Twitter probably know that I'm a big hoops junkie, whether it's college or NBA. So I would just – somebody I could go to bar with and grab some food and watch a couple of games.
So like probably, Jay Heaps.
What's that?
Like Jay Heaps, Duke basketball player.
Well, you know, I stay away from Dukies. Amobi Okugo is up there. Clint Irwin, he's a huge hoops guy. Sasha Kljestan, I can make fun of him a little bit because he's a Clippers fan. And, of course, I represent the Dubs because I'm from the Bay. So
yeah,
someone like that. Really, those guys are all big.
Really lucked out with that bandwagon, didn't you? Just
I did. 100%.
Right, 100%. 2 feet. Just buckled in the seatbelt as soon as he sat down. I thought Quinn Irwin's a good one. I would be more on the, like, seems like he's always doing really cool things outdoors, like going on awesome hikes and stuff. So that's kind of, that would be cool. You know, New York City, I'm stuck in this urban environment.
You want to go for, like, a vision quest with a pro athlete.
Oh, my God, that could be awesome.
I amend my answer, and I say Jose Gonzalez. I'm fascinated by different countries, and he's lived in, like, a million different places. Or Paulo Dacá.
Yeah.
Of course it's Paulo Dacá.
Okay. It depends on what you want to do. Like, if you want to go out in the town of New York City, I'm going with Mix and Kyrie. Like,
anything I'm doing,
I'm going with Pirlo and Villa and just like driving around in a convertible in the middle of the night.
Doing a whole nother thing. Okay, uh-huh. Last question, and then we are out of here. It's from Bearded Jack, and he says, of the MLS teams that did not make the playoffs last season, who, as of right now, has the best chance to make it this season? I can read a couple of names to you guys. Orlando City, NYC, Philly, and Chicago in the East. In the West, San Jose, Houston, Real Salt Lake, and, of course, your Colorado Rapids.
Out West, I'm going to say RSL.
where
with
here.
San Jose just a nib behind them. And in the East, in the East, that's a tough one. What do you think, Doyle?
I think it's pretty clearly got to be Orlando City, but I would have a lot more confidence in that prediction if their front office hadn't been in so much turmoil over the last couple of months. I mean, they've changed technical directors, I think, twice since the end of the season, which is crazy for a team that had, I thought, a pretty good debut season. Out West, it's San Jose. I mean, look, they missed it by, I think, four points last year. And you look at having Godoy for a full season, having Dawkins in, and Dawkins is not the best player in the league, but he's certainly an upgrade.
Innocent back, it looks like, probably.
Yep, and having Ameriquois for a full season. That Ameriquois-Wando partnership was really good. I look at all that and I say, is this team 5 points better than last year? And yeah, I'm afraid they are, everyone, and neutrals don't like that because they're not a super pretty team to watch, but they are. They are effective. Dom Kinnear knows how to win.
Well, there you have it. Those are our takes. Let us know what you think. Anything we talked about, we want to know your thoughts. We got a mountain over here, a swag that I got to give away. So at Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. Big thanks to our guest, Jerome Kiesewetter. Watch him on Friday, U.S. Canada. And thank you to Peter Vermees, as always, one of our favorite guests here on ETR. With that, we are out. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.